I was going to share for a few minutes on Psalm 57. I'm going to focus pretty much the whole time on Psalm 57. I have one minor diversion. We're going to take a slight trip outside of that for one part of it, but for the most part, I'm going to see in Psalm 57. This psalm really encouraged me and blessed me this past week. So, and it's actually full of treasure. So I'm just going to share. We're going to go through Psalm 57, kind of through from the beginning to the end, and we're going to try to unpack some of the treasure that God has for us in His Word. So, and maybe just to start off with a little bit of an overview, what we're going to do is just so you guys know where we're going. The first three verses or so focuses on some amazing truths about God. So we're going to dig into that a bit. Verses 4 to 6, which is kind of like the second part. It's going to go through the test of faith. As we're wanting to grow in God, you know, we're tested. Verse 7, which is part 3, what is our response when we're faced with trials? And then finally, verses 8 to 11 is going to be the conclusion, which is going to be the result, the result of it. So let's start off in verse 1. And again, the first three verses is going to be showing three amazing truths about God. And I just want us to look at it together. So let's start off in verse 1. In fact, I'm only going to do the first half of verse 1. Okay? So it says this. And by the way, Psalm 57 was written by David when he was fleeing from Saul and he had to take refuge in a cave. So he was at a very desperate time in his life. It wasn't all perfect life. Everything was great. He was running for his life. And he was hiding from Saul in a cave. That's what it kind of says when he wrote this psalm. So it's very good for us to have that context. He wrote this psalm in a time of desperation. So let's start off in the first part of verse 1. He says, "Be gracious to me, O God. Be gracious to me." So I read that, and I thought, what is he asking for God? He's asking actually for God's grace. He's asking for God to be gracious, which is another way of saying he needs God's grace. So I thought about that, and I thought, what is the purpose of his grace for us? And one thing I thought of, which I think a lot of us would agree, God's grace is very simply his help for us. When we need help with something, whether it's overcoming sin, whether it's just help with something in everyday life, God's grace is there to help us. And I have one verse I'm going to go to talk a little further about that. God's grace is completely sufficient and more than enough for anything in our life. And to prove that, let's go to 2 Corinthians chapter 9. So David was asking God to be gracious to him, to give him grace. God's grace is there to help us with any trial, with any trouble, with any problem we have. And his grace is completely enough at all times. So to prove that, I'm just going to read one verse, 2 Corinthians chapter 9. And we're going to look at verse 8. God is able to make all grace abound to you. So having all sufficiency in everything, you can have an abundance for every good deed. So if we look at this, we see the word all twice. All grace, all sufficiency. And we also see the word abound listed twice. Abound to me means more than enough, right? If you have more than what you need, that's abounding. So we see here, God can make all grace abound to you, so you can have all sufficiency in everything and have an abundance for every good deed. I love that verse, and that's a simple example of what God's grace can do for our life. If there's anything we need help with, if there's anything we're struggling with, you know, if we're struggling with temptation, with sin, if we're just struggling with being down or depressed about anything, God's grace is there to help us. And it's all sufficient for every need we have. And it can leave us with an abundance for every good deed. That means it can leave us with more than what we need for every good deed. One more comment about God's grace before we go on to the second point from Psalm 57. Who is God's grace given to? And I think a lot of us could answer that because we've heard that many times. But I'm going to go to James. It's just good for us it's good for us to hear that again. James chapter 2. Verse 6. So again, God's grace is all sufficient to help us at any time. And there's more than enough for us, and it can help us with any challenge, any issue, any situation in our life. But his grace is given. It says in verse 6 of James 4, God gives a greater grace. It says, God is opposed to the proud, but he gives grace to the humble. So if we want to receive God's grace, if we want to receive his help when we need help, we have to come to God in a heart of humility. We say, Lord, I can't do this on my own. I need your help. If we're struggling with temptation or with sin, we come to the Lord. We say, Lord, I can't do this on my own. I need your help. And then we have to believe that God's grace is indeed all-sufficient and all-powerful to help us with our need. So let's go back to Psalm 57. So we only got through the first half of verse 1. First attribute of God that was called out is that he can be gracious to us. He gives us grace. So let's look at the second half of verse 1. For my soul takes refuge in you. In the shadow of your wings, I will take refuge until destruction passes by. So I was thinking about this. What does it mean? What does taking refuge mean? And when I thought about it, it really means just to, taking refuge is like a place to hide. If you were in a field and there was a crazy rainstorm coming and there was a barn there, you could take refuge in the barn and that would be a place of refuge. Aaron and I, when Emma and Abigail were little kids, we were at Mill Lake Park once walking, and it was a pretty nice day, but we were halfway across the park from where our car was, like all the way on the other side of the lake, and then a crazy rainstorm came in out of nowhere, like just suddenly, crazy rain. So we looked around and we knew we'd like to get back to our vehicle, it would take too long. So we found this massive tree and it had a huge like shade over it. So we just went under the tree and we stayed there for about 15 minutes until the rainstorm passed. And that tree to us was a place of refuge. I love when it says we can take refuge in God. God can be our hiding place when trouble comes. It says there we can take refuge in the shadow of his wings. It takes faith to do that. We have to believe that we can actually go to God and say, Lord, I can't deal with this situation, Lord. It's too big for me. I just want to hide under you, Lord. And we can actually do that by faith. To learn how to do that, I'm just kind of just starting to learn this now, but to learn this, it's an amazing thing. We can just come to the Lord when the problem is too big for us. We say, Lord, I can't deal with this. I just need to hide under your wings. And the Lord takes us in. And it actually says that in the shadow of his wings, I can take refuge until destruction passes by. So it's like he wants to hide there until the problem is dealt with. And the Lord invites us to do that. So I invite you and I want to invite myself to learn to take refuge in God time and time again. And it's by faith we do that. Okay, so we talked about God's grace. We talked about how we can find refuge in him. So let's go to verse 2. I will cry to God Most High, to God who accomplishes all things for me. To talk about crying out to God, this is where we're going to take one little diversion away from Psalm 57 to a related topic, and then we'll come back to Psalm 57. So this week at our family Bible study, we talked about how Jesus is our friend. And I just wanted to share a couple things about that, and then I'm going to talk about how that relates to crying out to God. So to do that, let's go to John chapter 15. And this is actually another amazing truth. That Jesus is our friend, and it has an amazing implication for our life. So John 15, I'm just going to read verses 12 to 15. So Jesus says in John 15, verse 12, this is my commandment, that you love one another just as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, that one lay down his life for his friends. So here we see the first time Jesus is saying he'll lay down his life for his friends, meaning for us. He's calling us his friends. Verse 14, you are my friends if you do what I command you. So there we see it again. We're his friends if we obey him. And verse 15, no longer do I call you slaves, for the slave does not know what his master is doing, but I have called you friends. For all things I have heard from my Father, I have made known to you. So we see three times here, Jesus is calling us his friends. And what that means is, if he's calling us his friends, it also means that he's our friend. He's our friend. So take a moment and think about this for a moment. If you had the best, closest possible friend you could have in your life, you don't have to say this out loud, but what are some things in your mind you'd think about? What would this friend be like to you? to be the best possible friend, the closest possible friend to you? What attributes would that friend need to have? So I asked my kids that this week as well. We wanted them to just think about that. You know, some of the things they came up with was, you know, what would this close friend have to be like? They'd have to be loyal. You know, they'd have to be understanding. You know, they'd have to be willing to listen to you, willing to stick with you. You know, there was a lot of different good things that came up with. So as I thought about that, I think about this, guys. It says in Proverbs 18, there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. Jesus is that best friend for us. And, you know, I'm just starting to see this myself. He's our very best, closest friend. He understands us perfectly. He listens to us. He cares about us. And he is that friend that we should be able to come to. So the question is, if he's this close friend to us, what is the implication for us? What should our reaction be? So I'm going to read two other verses. So Psalm 62, verse 8. You don't have to flip there if you don't want, but Psalm 62, verse 8, it says, "Trust in him at all times, O people. Pour out your heart before him. God is a refuge for us." And there we see the word refuge again. But if Jesus is that close friend for us, and if he's closer to us than any other human friend we could possibly have, he cares for us, he loves us, he understands us perfectly, he's willing to listen, we can go to God and we can just pour out our heart before him. We can just tell him all our concerns. We can tell him all our cares. We can cry out to him and say, "Lord, I don't know how to handle the situation. Lord, can you help me?" And we can just cry out to him with our heart. We can pour out our heart to him, and he's that close friend who cares about us more than any other human friend possibly could. I'll go to one more verse, and you don't have to turn here again. It's 1 Peter. 1 Peter. Where is it here? Yeah, 1 Peter chapter 5. It says, "Humble yourself under the mighty hand of God, so he can exalt you at the proper time, casting all your anxiety on him because he cares for you." So the Lord, being that close friend to us, we can pour out our heart to him, we can cast our cares on him because he cares for us. And I'm just starting to see this, and I'm almost 45, and I think the sooner you guys can see God as that close friend, and you can go to him first, you can pour out your heart to him, you can cry out to him, you know, that's a wonderful thing because he wants that for us. And we can go back to Psalm 57. And by the way, we don't have to turn there, but there was one example in Scripture of a lady who did that perfectly. There was a lady named Hannah in 1 Samuel, and she was really struggling in her spirit and in her soul because she didn't have a child for years. And, you know, she wanted a child, she didn't have one, and then she ended up going to the temple to pray. And she was so distressed. It said she was pouring out her soul to God. She wasn't even talking verbally, like her mouth was moving, but no words were coming out. And then she actually told Eli the priest, she's like, "You know what, I was so distressed, I was just pouring out my soul to God." And she was doing what we need to learn to do. When we're feeling distressed, we should come to God first and just learn that he's that good friend who cares. And he cares for us more than any other human friend could. So back to Psalm 57. So it says, "I'll cry to God Most High, to God who accomplishes all things for us. He'll send from heaven and save me. He'll reproach those who trample upon me. And he'll send forth his loving kindness and truth." So, closing verses 1 to 3, just to summarize it, God is gracious to us and his grace is unlimited. We can learn to take refuge in God. He wants to be that place of refuge for us. And finally, we can cry out to God. And if we can see God as the friend who's closer than a brother, you know, to me, some really amazing attributes about God that I want to remember. So moving on to verse 4. So, you know, it seems like it shifts here in verse 4. And it seems like, you know, sometimes trouble will come. Sometimes there'll be tests of faith we have to go through in life. And I see this is what's happening here to David. So let's read verse 4. "My soul is among lions. I must lie among those who breathe fire. Even the sons of men, whose teeth are spears and arrows and their tongue is a sharp sword." So when I read the word about, you know, he's among lions, you know, the first thing I think about is in 1 Peter when Peter says, the devil is a roaring lion seeking those to devour, right? The enemy's out there and he wants to destroy our faith. He wants to destroy our peace, right? And I see when David describes this, you know, that's the first thing I was reminded of. And then if we look in verse 6 here, he says, "They have prepared a net for my steps. My soul is bowed down." And when I thought about that, I thought, you know what? Sometimes we can go through trials And we can get discouraged. That can there bow down underneath us. What should we do? So let's see what David does here. And again, if you remember, this psalm was written when David was under risk of dying. He was running from Saul. Saul was trying to kill him. He was hiding in a cave. It was a desperate situation, much more desperate probably than a lot of the trials we face. But let's see how David handled it, and then we can learn for ourselves as well. So verse 7, he says, "My heart is steadfast, O God. My heart is steadfast." So when I read that, it almost seemed like David was telling himself that he was telling himself to be steadfast, and he was reminding himself he needs to be steadfast in God. When I looked at the word steadfast, what does it mean? It means not moving, not yielding, not budging, just holding on tight, like without any change. So I thought to myself, what would he be steadfast in? And one of the things I think he was probably needing to be steadfast in the very things that we read in verses 1 to 3. God's grace is fully sufficient for every situation, right? David was probably reminding himself of what he just shared. God is a perfect refuge for us. If I'm faced with any trouble, I can take refuge in God, right? And I can cry out to God at any time. God is my friend who's closer than a brother. I can call out to him and I can pour out my heart to him and he cares for me. David may have been reminding himself of those very things. And in doing so, his heart was steadfast in that truth. And I think that's something we can learn from that. A very quick example, and it may not be perfectly related, but sometimes we go to a cul-de-sac to go camping, and there's a dock there, and there's water, and sometimes we go on the dock with the little kids, and the kids know I like to sometimes grab them and just throw them in, and they don't like that. So if I'm on the dock with the kids, and then they sense that might be happening, there's a ladder on the dock, and they run to the ladder, and they grip the ladder with what I'd call a death grip. So then if I'm going to go to them, I'm not able to get them. And they grip so tight, like a death grip, it's almost impossible for me to even grab them and throw them in. So when I thought about that, I was thinking that's like holding on to God's truth so tightly is a similar thing. Like we're holding on immovable, we're steadfast, and we're holding on to that God loves us, his grace is sufficient for me. I can hide in him. And if we do that, if we hold on that tightly, we're going to be able to get through the trial. And our soul, if it's bowed down, is going to be able to rise up again. And finally, the conclusion. So what is the result? David reminds himself of God's truth. David's faced with trials. David reminds himself that his heart is steadfast. He needs, "Your loving kindness is great to the heavens and your truth to the clouds. Be exalted above the heavens, O God. Let your glory be above all the earth." It's a wonderful thing here. We see David concluding with praise to God. Even though he's in the midst of a extremely dangerous situation, he's in a cave, he's hiding from Saul, his life could be in danger, because he's refreshed himself with God's truth and he's steadfast, his worry, his soul being bowed down, turns into praise to God. And I just thought that was a marvelous thing. If we're feeling discouraged, if we're in a place where we're feeling hopeless, we're feeling like we're not going to be able to manage, we should do what David did. We should remind ourselves of God's promises. We hold on steadfastly to them.